Next case is 00203 and 00550, George Shima Buick Inc. versus Barbara Ferenchak.
All these cases gives us more work.
You're right, we shouldn't have taken this case.
The issue submitted to the court reached by way of a certain case is whether in a small claims action the statutory authority under section 1925.17 allows a corporation to prosecute and present small claims actions by a non-lawyer is constitutional. So with our position, the 11th district disagreed with the 2-1 decision that is permissible. I believe that the analysis of this question, the good analysis of the question, was found by the 1st District Court of Appeals in the Alliance Group versus Rosenfeld. They went into an analysis as to whether that is constitutional. There's no argument in this case.
Counsel?
Yes.
Did you represent this woman at Chicago?
Yes.
Did anyone serve the Attorney General with the claim of unconstitutionality?
No. I just filed a motion to dismiss the complaint on the basis that the complaint was signed, was George Shima Buick Incorporated, signed by George Shima as president of that corporation.
The court overruled you.
Yes.
The court appealed. The court appealed to be challenged to constitutionality. The statute?
That's correct.
Did you not serve the Attorney General?
No, we didn't serve the Attorney General. I don't believe in any other cases they did either. I don't think the first district Attorney General Starville applies in this case, but we're not probably declaratory judgment asserting that a certain statute is unconstitutional. It's the application of the statute to the specific facts. Necessity of serving, involving the Attorney General in the case. The trial court considered the matter on its merits, overruled the Court of Appeals, considered this issue on its merits, and overruled our claim involving in the case. And I think the best analysis is the recent decision by this court in Disciplinary Counsel versus Coleman, to the matter that a non-attorney, a person who is not licensed, may not practice law. And this is what we've done in this case, finding a plea. It's the management of litigation in this case by Mr. Shima, who is not an attorney. And that offends the rulemaking authority of this court granted by the Constitution. This court wanted to pass a rule, I believe, that maybe about that rule in the small claims court, a non-attorney may represent a corporation, may represent an individual in litigation in the court. But until that happens, we believe that the reasoning of the 1st District Court of Appeals, which is followed by the 8th District Court of Appeals, should be followed, and the case should have been dismissed and should not have been allowed to proceed because that statute is unconstitutional.
Thank you, Mr. Mancino. Yeah. After you have not filed briefs, in the case is submitted, you'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All right.
The next case in our calendar is 99-22-16. 056. Cook has recused herself from the case. Very pleased to have sitting in his place as Justice Cook. Judge John Patton is a judge of the Court of Appeals in the
Judge Patton.
Thank you.
And Justice Stratton has also recused herself from the case, and we're pleased to have sitting in place Justice Stratton. Judge Peter Abley, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the Court of Appeals. Welcome to Abley. Mr. Lance.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm here for Prosecutor Jim Mayer. I am sharing my comments equally with the State of Ohio, who has intervened to discuss specifically with you the constitutionality of the statute.
And on that point, Mr. Landis, usually we don't need to go through procedure or the facts because we've read the briefs and understand about what's going on, where Mr. Bristow is and all of that.
There's a lot to think about.
But I want to, however, in this case, I want to start with the procedure. Because we've recently decided a case that says that you can't question the constitutionality of a statute unless you've served the Attorney General. Now, what I'd like to know is how this whole thing got started. Mr. Bristow's in jail.
Yes.
Court issues an order saying you can't file any legal actions any place without coming through me.
It started with him not in jail. He was indicted and convicted by a jury of telephone harassment. Mm-hmm. That was counted up to a total of 25 counts of telephone harassment for his career in that respect. He had asked to plea bargain. Part of the plea bargain he requested was to declare himself a vexatious litigator. A complaint was filed. He had sued all the judges in Richland County, and so Judge Timberline in Crawford County had the honor of trying his criminal case, and then also received the complaint. The complaint was actually filed in Crawford County against him, to which he acceded. He agreed to be called a vexatious litigator.
The complaint was filed against who? Bristow?
Against Bristow.
By whom?
By James Mayer, the prosecutor.
Okay, so that's how this whole thing started.
That's how the whole thing started.
Okay, I understand all the other things that you've talked about. So the prosecutor sues a defendant in a criminal case.
Yes.
And the prosecutor says, I want a declaration that he's a vexatious litigator.
That's right.
Okay. Trial court says, yep, he's a vexatious litigator.
And Bristow said that too.
Okay. Goes to the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals, but Bristow, in his defense, said it's a violation of equal protection.
I don't know that he ever raised it.
All right. He certainly didn't raise the constitutionality of the statute.
That's right.
Nor did Mr. Mayer.
No.
Court of Appeals looked at it and said, statute's unconstitutional.
It was one of those happy surprises that came up first in oral argument.
Okay. The Attorney General comes charging in, says, I want to be heard.
Yes, Your Honor.
I have a right to be heard on the constitutionality of the statute. Was she ever served?
No,
okay, doesn't the statute require, before you can question the constitutionality of a statute, the Attorney General be served?
Yes, it does.
Why are we here?
We're here for two different routes. One of them was on a certified conflict on the constitutionality, but the other one was that there was an appeal granted, discretionary appeal allowed, of the other issues underlying the case, the ones that we thought we were going to argue at the Third District.
But do we have jurisdiction?
You have jurisdiction at least on the discretionary appeal for those things that do not deal with the constitutionality of the statute. You have that as a minimum.
So we don't decide the constitutionality. We can decide the issue that Mr. Bristow is a vexatious litigator and that the order of the trial court was in fact reasonable and proper,
yes,
pursuant to the statute.
Pursuant to the statute.
And then we don't have to argue constitutionality.
Actually, that's exactly right.
And the only reason the Attorney General is here to argue constitutionality.
If you choose.
Your mind a little.
There are parties to the action at this point, so you may find that this is a different case than you decided before on constitutionality and whether or not it's at issue.
Okay.
But in any case, there were two separate grounds for the order. And the vexatious litigator statute would be neither necessary nor sufficient to justify the order that I'm standing up to defend. The other means is inherent authority in the court. And that's what I'd like to focus on, leave to the Attorney General
Okay, just one more question. If we thought that the certified issue, not if we thought, because it is, certified issue is on the constitutionality,
yes,
the dispute between the districts. If we say that the constitutional issue is not before us because there was never, the Attorney General was never properly served, therefore the issue is not before us, and we dismiss the case, that goes back to leaving the order in place.
That would be horrible, then.
Why?
I shouldn't say that because...
Yeah, you win.
What it would do is leave the Third District Court of Appeals decision in place. We're the appellant of the Third District.
But if we said that the Third District did not have jurisdiction to determine and raise the constitutional issue because the Attorney General was never served and vacate their decision.
I suppose it would have to go back to the Third District to determine whether or not they were going to allow our order, keeping him out of the courts, to proceed.
Okay.
And my concern is that as it stands now, Your Honor, they said that the only thing that Judge Kimmerline can do is to do a pre-filing inquiry of his own court. This is a guy that filed 137 cases across prudent plain. That doesn't really do. And he's not going to file in Crawford County anymore. He's going to file everywhere else. My father-in-law was a shop teacher in inner city Baltimore. And the juxtaposition of power tools and kids makes for a nervous time. And you here are the custodians of the powerful tool that is the system of justice. And just like my father-in-law, when somebody misused the power tool, he had to take it away from the kids. It was presumed that he didn't really need that for his next project. And if he convinced you he really needed that tool, it had to be used under close supervision. That's really what Judge Kimmerline has done for you here. You're the custodian of this tool. It's been used, misused, and thrust into the hearts and souls of over 100 victims, some of which are here today, because they feel very strongly about it. Your Honor,
let me take you to the issue that I guess gives me the most concern. We've argued in brief, but the attempt by the statute to restrict appellate rights. Let me hear your strongest argument.
They have other means to raise the issue. If you feel that there's been an abuse of discretion in the gatekeeping role that the statute sets up, they can file original actions in the Court of Appeals and in this court. They can refile the same complaint and ask the court to reconsider that pre-filing inquiry.
If the trial court determines that this is that the plaintiff cannot file, the action cannot proceed, what original action would a vexatious litigator be able to file?
If there was a clear duty to allow the filing, a mandamus action would lie above.
Always wrong.
Your Honor, I wanted to touch on inherent authority. There are some good cases on inherent authority. The U.S. Supreme Court has, in fact, barred litigants completely from this court, only after violence in the 30s. You've got a guy with 137 frequent flyer miles in the court. What's all we've done here is to give a pre-filing inquiry. He has to seek leave. That was approved by this court in a case called Forsyth. In this case, though, we have to go beyond just this court. And the U.S. Supreme Court has said that the inherent power of the court to protect the system from abuses attaches to the litigants that appear before it. And when Lonnie Briscoe appeared before this judge, he became subject to Judge Kimmerline's inherent authority to protect abuses of the powerful tool that's your justice. He's doing that for you, and he's done it well. No other order will do. The original vexatious litigator order merely said that he needed to seek leave before any clerk in Ohio at the trial court level would accept pleadings. Lonnie then announced that he was going to file everywhere else. So he files out of state, he files courts that don't apply there, he files things that don't pretend to be a non-frivolous claim. He has no right to that. The shelf of the clerk's office is there for non-frivolous claims. He's lost the presumption that he has one, basically. This is really a burden-shifting issue. And he has to bear the burden now, showing he has a real case, after 137 times of proving he doesn't know what a real case is, doesn't want a real case, and only wants to harm people. This is a telephone harasser that's now using your system to continue to harass the state.
Is it your opinion that the trial judge's order is broad enough to handle this now?
We believe so, Your Honor.
Because I was getting from your argument that he's able to get around it by filing in other states.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, he ought not, but we had a little trouble with the with where he got shipped to the prison. They didn't know about it, and the mail got out directly to other courts without going through Judge Kimmerline, as the order required.
But if we found the order, let's assume we do the constitutionality, we find the statute to be constitutional, find the order not to be overbroad,
yes.
That would stop this problem.
Yes, Your Honor. But that's what we urge you to do. Remember what's at stake. This guy has written that he will bury these people in mosques and their children and their estates.
But isn't the underlying issue as to whether a party has a right to for the courts to be open so that one can exhaust all possible remedy, and for a statute to come to a certain point and says you are no longer able to appeal. Now, the United States Supreme Court, I don't think in what you were arguing, stops them from appealing. Once they have exhausted all their remedies, then they may be barred from continuing with such frivolous actions.
Your Honor, I think there are two reasons why this is proper. In the first, you have a right to appeal as a property interest, so it can be taken away with due process. The complaint was filed against Lonnie Brista. He had the opportunity to defend it. He chose not to. He had due process and thereby lost that property right to appeal. This court has said it's a property right in the case called Atkins. The other thing, Your Honor, is deals with the open courts provision, and that is for a remedy. To remedy a legal harm. Lonnie doesn't have one. Lonnie never pretends to have one. He just wants to say bad things about people or show up at their door with a summons attached to it. And so the open court provision ought not keep Judge Kimmerline from doing
it. The point is that he's questioning the constitutionality, perhaps not directly, but he's questioning the constitutionality of 2323-52-1,
yes.
And saying, all right, you did this to me, you did that to me, now I have a right to appeal as to whether that was in violation of the Constitution. And the trial court says, no, the statute says we have a right to stop you from appealing.
Yes, Your Honor.
And is that allowing someone to have an open court and exhaust all of their remedies?
The open court provision only goes to people who have harm, and Lonnie's never shown that he has harm, and therefore the open court provision is not offended. That's our position. I have made a professional representation to yield the remainder of my time to the state of Ohio. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lennon. Ms. Frank.
Why should he be out of the room?
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. I'd like to clarify this morning, which is why I'm here. I'm counsel for Attorney General Betty Montgomery, who intervened to defend the constitutionality of the vexatious legal statute. As we've established here, the Third District decided sua sponte that the defendants consider sua sponte that the statute issue was unconstitutional, so there was not an opportunity for any of the parties to serve the Attorney General. However, I should inform you that Mr. Landis did go personally soon after the decision so that we would have the opportunity to consider whether we'd like to be before this court to defend the constitutionality. In the very short time remaining, I'll jump right to what seems to be the most problematic issue for the 10th District and perhaps to this court, and that is whether the statute passes muster under the Access to Courts provision. There's no question that Article 1, Section 16 of the Ohio Constitution provides that courts shall be open and that every person shall have remedy by due course of law. That right is not absolute, however. This court has held that right to redress, the opportunity for redress, shall be given at a meaningful time in a meaningful manner. We meet that test here. First, there is a substitute available. The substitute for direct access to the courts is indirect access. It's not shutting the house. It's not locking the door of the courtroom, as this court has found problematic in the past. It does allow a litigant to file non-frivolous claims, but that litigant must seek permission first. It allows sufficient substitutes to be be available, whether that's for official action to this court, the federal court action, or simply redrafting the complaint so that it is not an abuse of the court system or unreasonable. And finally, it allows the litigant to hire an attorney. There's nothing in the statute that precludes the litigant from hiring counsel to pursue the claim on his or her behalf.
Counsel, if this inmate were intentionally, maliciously thrown down a flight of stairs in the institution by an employee of the state of Ohio, in violation of all the what's the procedure for that inmate to bring objection to court claims once he or she has been determined to be vexatious?
I see that my time is up, Mr. Chief Justice, and I'd like to respond. Well, under the statute, Your Honor, that inmate, that person who's been declared to be a vexatious litigator must file something like a motion for leave from the common pleas court that determined that person to be a vexatious litigator. And then the court would then give permission for that person to file an action in the court of claims, or for that matter, in whatever court a litigant sought.
And if that the judge having who made the decision, so the place you file is if the judge made the determination that you are a vexatious litigator.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And if the judge said, no, I'm not granting leave, what's the remedy available at that point to that inmate?
There is no right of appeal from that decision earlier. However, then we have to fall to the substitutes that are available, whether that would be an affidavit of prejudice in this court, an original action in this court, a federal suit to bring damages, or simply to hire an attorney to pursue that claim on that vexatious litigant's behalf. There is a difference between the scope of the order that's at issue in the Bristow case and the scope of the statute. The order, the statute is neither necessary nor sufficient to support Judge Kerwin's order, and that order is supported by the inherent authority of the court with respect to that particular case and that particular litigant. I see that my time is up.
Yes, but I'd like to ask you another question, too. That one of the conflict cases is Dieters versus Briggs out of the First District. Are you satisfied that that opinion, which is only like two pages and very short, satisfactorily deals with the issue before you, before us?
I'm satisfied, Your Honor, that it came to the right result. As you recognize, it is a rather short opinion. The 10th District goes into a much greater detailed analysis with respect to constitutionality. We disagree with the 10th District's conclusion, of course, that subsection G of that provision...
The appeal provision. The appeal issue.
That's correct.
How would you handle that?
As I was just explaining in response to the last question, there are opportunities for substitutes for an appeal, whether that's an original action or whether someone can hire an attorney. There is no constitutional right to an appeal under the Ohio Constitution or the United States Constitution. There is no right of any kind to file a frivolous claim or to file something that is merely for the purpose of harassment.
I thought we said in Atkinson versus Grumman, I think it was, that there is a right to appeal. And it's a constitutionally protected right. One appeal.
The court held in Atkinson, I should correct Your Honor.
Is that the case?
That there is no constitutional right to an appeal, the right to an appeal. There is, of course, the right of access to the court and to the courts. And this court has held over many years in many different cases that right of access needs to be protected. But the right that we're talking about here is not simply just the right of access to the courts, but the right to bring a frivolous claim, the right to make harassing or malicious statements against another person. And that is certainly not a right that has ever been protected by the Constitution or by this court. We're not asking here just to affirm what the General Assembly has done to balance these interests. We're asking the court to affirm what judges across the state have been doing to protect the effectiveness of the court system. Your Honor, I see that my time has well passed.
Thank you, Ms. French.
Thank you.
Mr. Bristow has waived your argument. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.